Joe, you know what the Joint Chiefs told us the greatest threat facing America was? Global warming.
Well, climate change might be something we should at least consider, you know, in a private, laissez-faire kind of way. But our greatest threat? Give me a break. But wait, there's more. The far left's radical DC politicians are using climate change as an excuse for everything on their wish list. We'll have to mobilize our entire economy around saving ourselves and taking care of this planet. And those wish list items are nothing short of pipe dreams.
All of these activities involved emitting greenhouse gases and getting to zero by 2050. It's bigger than anything humanity has done to date.
There are several dirty secrets within the left's green energy solutions, and it's setting up America for complete failure. All the while, our enemies continue to gain more and more strength and power. Tonight, I expose those secrets to you. Tonight, Green New Steel, the Great Reset of Energy.
Hello, America. In case you didn't know, we're speeding toward climate hell, according to the UN. That's right. Another new report says we might surpass the global warming threshold of 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit for all of us American rubes within the next 5 years. Now, remember that when we started talking about this back in the 90s, they said by 2020, all of our East Coast beaches would be gone. So that hasn't happened, but let's continue on what they say is going to happen. If we pass that 2.7 degree threshold, well, it will usher in, and I'm quoting, climate catastrophe, triggering mass species die-offs, rendering most low-lying islands all but inhabitable. What should we do? The good news is we can save planet Earth, but only through rapid, far-reaching, and unprecedented changes in all aspects of society. Oh, well, that's great. Now, you know, when global elites talk like that in official reports, it's way scarier than climate change. And then there's this headline. I mean, who said journalism is dead? They're apparently all right. Quote, global carbon dioxide levels rise to the highest levels in more than 4 million years. The first line says, despite lockdown restrictions around the world, carbon dioxide emissions increased to the levels higher than the previous record from 4 million years ago. Wow, those dinosaurs when they were driving those damn SUVs. Well, they didn't get everything right, but at least the dinosaurs kept accurate stats on global carbon dioxide levels so the journalists could verify records like this. I want you to know I'm not a climate denier, climate change denier. I'm a climate denier. There is no climate. I am not a global climate change denier, but I am a healthy skeptic of climate change, especially since I remember being in grade school and being told to be afraid of the ice age because climate change was coming and it was global cooling. Didn't happen, did it? I'm a denier of neo-Marxist leaders around the world, and especially in the U.S., that are using climate change as the excuse to ram through their bucket list of left-wing policies that will trample our banking accounts, our economies, and our personal freedoms. They use climate change as a nebulous boogeyman, kind of a threat that we can only avoid if we adopt all of their new progressive solutions, and we have to do it right now. It's really hard to take these people seriously when Vice President Harris blames climate change for our border crisis, or when the House Democrats on Homeland Security Subcommittee invite Bill Nye the Science Guy to testify about climate change. That's almost like me being in charge of the National Archives, but I think that would probably work out better. How can you possibly trust people who preach, believe the science, when their version of science insists that a man can become a woman and vice versa? It's the same crowd in official government documents that now refer to mothers as birthing people. Birthing people, I love them. Happy Birthing People Day. When that's your track record, I think you've given us permission to be a little skeptical about your Chicken Little sky is falling routine when it comes to climate disaster. Oh, and your plans that have never been done before. Bill Gates just said this is the greatest thing mankind will ever do. We have 50 years to do it. Now, let me just ask you. I'm a bit of a historian, and I know that it was really an amazing thing to build the Brooklyn Bridge, a suspension bridge. And we had bridges going into Manhattan. And then somebody got the great idea, hey, let's tunnel. Now, nothing like that had ever been done before. We didn't even know that, you know, you could get the bends from going down underwater. We had no way to do this. They didn't blow up all of the bridges. They left all of the bridges in. And then they started digging to see if maybe we can do this. What they're asking us to do is blow up all of our bridges and then come up and do stuff that nobody's ever done before. Sorry, your science is going to have to do a little bit better than Bill Nye, the science guy, and, people who have never done stuff before, ever. But President Biden insists.
This is not a joke. You know what the Joint Chiefs told us the greatest threat facing America was? Global warming. Because there'll be significant population movements, fights over land, millions of people leaving places because they're literally sinking below the sea in Indonesia.
Oh my gosh, that sounds horrible. And he said it wasn't a joke. And he was right, it wasn't a joke. It was just a lie. Because the Joint Chief, the chairman, had to come out and say, yeah, I think it's China, maybe Russia, that is our biggest threat. No joke. The left uses climate change as their untouchable permission to slip, to force through their agenda. It's a nice permission slip to do that, and saving the planet on such a grand, important scale. I mean, who in their right mind wants to kill the planet and all the cute little animals? When they keep it in general terms, people tend to agree that we should be taking action to avoid climate disaster. But then when you're like, okay, so what does that really mean? Apparently, people don't want to take as much action as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris say we must. There's a new study that was released last month that found that among registered voters, 15% said, I'd be willing to spend up to $10 of my own money to fight climate change. Ooh, $10. Now, 35% said, oh, $10, that's ridiculous. I wouldn't be willing to even spend a dollar of my own money on climate change. Well, too bad for that half of the country, because President Biden wants you to use a little bit more of your money on the environment. This is why it's vital the Democrats keep their green policies away from the voting booth, because nobody wants anything to do with it. And they can't have an honest debate about green policies, because that will never allow them the sweeping Marxist changes that they crave. Instead, they rely on policy edicts from the administrative state. Oh, my gosh. And the presidential executive orders. I mean, Woodrow Wilson is looking down, just smiling and throwing a party. Oh, and the new public-private partnership, which the World Economic Forum is very passionate about. So we're starting to see things like what just happened recently at Exxon, where the new activist investment firm called Engine Number One just won 3 seats on Exxon's board. Engine Number One has been targeting Exxon to pressure the company to cut its carbon emissions. Carbon emission, isn't that what they make? I mean, that everything they do is what? Yes, they need to shift away from that old business of fossil fuels. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we got to get Ronald McDonald to shift away from some of that fast food. You know what I'm saying? The Wall Street Journal called it, quote, a watershed moment in the effort seeking more environmental, social, and governance modifications at the nation's biggest companies. Engine number one, the campaign was supported by BlackRock. You know, the new George Soros, which you may recall is the largest firm in the world with almost $8 trillion under management. Oh, by the way, they also are advising the president on economic policy. Oh, and the Treasury. They're everywhere. Engine number one hired two former BlackRock executives to work on its X on board campaign. BlackRock's CEO, Larry Fink, is one of the board of trustees in the World Economic Forum. That's great. BlackRock and the World Economic Forum, and now Exxon. Fink is also in the running to be Biden's new Treasury Secretary, but he decided, I love women so much, I'll stay here. Over the last year, Fink has transformed BlackRock into an ESG cultural center. Fink talks ESG nonstop at company town halls, seminars on ESG investing. It seems to take place every single week. An executive named Brian Deese was promoted to push money managers to consider ESGs in all of their investment decisions. Well, guess where Brian Deese is now? Come on, guess. He's the director of the National Economic Council at the White House. Larry Fink realizes there's a lot of money to be made in creating new investment funds. And all of these funds would be dedicated to ESG. He figures if BlackRock can control ESG investments, ensuring that companies like Exxon have ESG board members, well, then all they need is the government to step up and require companies to comply with ESG components. Isn't this perfect? Wow. When the world comes together, what could be done? Turns out the SEC is already working on those plans right now. Huh. In March, the SEC created a climate and ESG task force within its enforcement division. According to the SEC, this task force will develop initiatives to proactively identify ESG-related misconduct. Wow. Later this year, the SEC is set to establish the rules that require companies to disclose the risks they face from climate change and the policies to curb their own emissions. The thing about attacking companies like Exxon, Chevron, for being in the oil business, combined with Biden's executive orders shutting down oil exploration and pipelines, is that it completely denies reality. The fact is that even Americans and Europeans will have to continue using fossil fuels for a very long time out of necessity. I know. I'm on my Standing Rock Ranch, which is 100% self-efficient. I don't have a pipeline, a wire, or anything else. So I have to create all of my own energy. Well, we started 10 years ago, and the first system cost me about $100,000 to put in. It never worked. We were running diesel generators to be able to generate power. So we tried again. We did another system, more experts. It didn't work. So we ran that diesel generator, and then we thought, I'd like to be a little more green. So we put some natural gas in, or propane gas, to be able to run some of those generators. Well, now I have three Cummins engines and I think five giant tanks of propane, you know, just in case something goes down. And if that system goes down, I have two generators that run just on diesel. Well, I've also spent about $250,000 in the last 10 years on top of the first initial six figures to replace all of that in 10-year period. And with only about $350,000, you can be energy independent. That's right. Last summer, I bought two 6,000-pound batteries. Oh, yes, they were $15,000. But the good news is they'll last a whole 5 to 8 years. Isn't that fantastic? Oh, and some of the solar panels I put up 10 years ago, yeah, they all need to be replaced because they're not efficient enough now. So everybody can live green. Oh, I didn't tell you about the wind turbines I also have on the hill. This is what it actually takes to be green. I still, all of my backups, and I need lots of backups, all of my backups are still run on either propane or diesel. The left thinks that it's saving our planet by attacking our fossil fuel production. But what they're actually doing is bankrupting people and handing long-term advantage over to Russia and OPEC nations. Russia can read the woke tea leaves and they like, oh, I like what I see, yes. A Russian executive from the oil company Gazprom, you know, the Russian gas company that I'm sure is very woke, he said recently, quote, it looks like the West will have to rely on more on what it calls hostile regimes for supply. Oh, yes, we will. Thank you, Joe Biden. Russia energy giant Rosneft is building a massive new oil terminal in the Arctic that by 2030 is projected to deliver 100 million tons of oil per year. The project will require 400,000 workers. Boy, I hope the Russians do care about the Arctic Circle, right? I mean, they're going to take care of it with those 400,000 people, right? Rosneft says that it will build 15 entirely new towns to accommodate the Arctic workforce. Russia is laughing all the way to the bank, and so will BlackRock. Yeah. Yeah, they're not dummies. I mean, yeah, we're
so green. We want to make sure ESG, especially the E and the S and the G are important. But E, the energy part, the environment part, boy, I tell you, they see it as a gold mine
in the U.S. The top two investments in BlackRock's emerging European fund are Russian oil companies and energy companies. Yeah. Yeah. Luck Oil and Gazprom. So whether the green investment thing pans out at home or the world has to try, you know, go over to Russia or OPEC for its oil, it's win-win, really, for BlackRock. And there you will be. You're already paying the highest price at the pump that you've paid in the last 7 years. And, sweetheart, we're just at the beginning. We will pay the price just like we do whenever Democrat elites, progressive elites begin to fix things. After a quick break, I'm going to share some of the dirty little secrets behind the left's green energy policies. For President Biden and his fellow Democrats, battling climate change through immediate radical policy is the ultimate righteous moral crusade. But for every single change they want to force on America, there's some fine print that they don't want to tell you about. For instance, going green is really expensive, doesn't always work, and it's complicated to say the least. Take solar energy. What's so complicated? You take the energy out of the sky and put it into your home. Well, in April, President Biden pledged to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. by at least 50% in 9 years. Not 9 years. Wind your clock. It'll be here soon. To achieve that, one estimate says that at least half of the U.S. electricity would need to come from solar and wind power by 2030. Oh, that's great. So you want to tunnel under the water into Manhattan, and you want us to blow up all the bridges first. Last year, a new California law took effect, which requires every new home built in California to have solar panels. It's so great and so freeing. I just feel so much better. I warn you, similar laws are guaranteed to be coming to a state near you. But while we're here on this freeing feeling, here's what Democratic leaders in California and the White House forgot to tell you. China dominates the world's solar panel market, largely because it's an industry based on forced labor or slave labor. The Uyghurs in Xinjiang, yeah, that's what they do. Isn't it weird? A new investigative report from Sheffield Hallam University in UK finds 2.6 million Uyghurs are being forced by the Chinese government to work in solar power related factories. What's the problem? It's not slave labor. It's a labor transfer initiative. The report describes this labor initiative occurring within an environment of unprecedented coercion, undergirded by the constant threat of re-education and internment. Many indigenous workers are unable to refuse or walk away from these jobs, and thus the programs are tantamount to forcible transfer of populations and enslavement. Yeah, I know. Whites are so evil. Wait a minute. Those are Asians that are doing that. How do I figure that one out in critical race theory? The report identifies 135 re-education camps located near solar power factories. After completing their terms in the camps, many Uyghur prisoners are then forced to go to work in these factories. China is by far the world's number one exporter of both solar panels and the main components for making solar panels. Eight of the top 10 solar-powered companies in the world are Chinese. Only one of them is American. And I know the left is saying that we're paying slave wages, but I don't think they actually mean the same thing that Chinese do. 20 years ago, U.S. companies made 22% of the world's solar panels. Now, 1% made here in America. 95% of solar modules require one primary material called solar-grade polysilicon. China makes 80% of the world's polysilicon, with 45% of that coming right from the Xinjiang region of China, where, you know, they have these really nice summer camps. They love them so much, they keep those camps open year-round. Making polysilicon requires a huge amount of electricity, which in the Xinjiang region is mostly generated by coal. So as the Sheffield Hallam University report puts it, for a human rights and a climate perspective, the alternative of basing our green energy future on coal's high carbon emissions and on the slave labor of oppressed communities is a higher and longer term price to pay. Yeah, but don't think about that. Just think about how free it will be when you have your solar panel up, dude, in your new California home. Democrats are obsessed with the alleged oppression of minority groups in the U.S., but I don't think they give a rat's ass about actual enslavement that's happening right now. 2 weeks ago, House Democrats voted down a Republican amendment to require companies to disclose any ties to Uyghur forced labor. Yeah, why vote on that one? That's so hard to decide. Okay, so let's say the left eventually grows a conscience, not going to happen, and decides solar panels aren't the way to go. You know, just because of the Chinese slave labor. Oh, and all the carbon that China puffs into the atmosphere, making the solar panels for California houses. So let's go to wind power. That's got to be good. I know, because I have some of that wind power here at the ranch, and oh my gosh. The good news is General Electric is still number one in the world with wind turbine manufacturing. But Goldwind, a Chinese company, is number two. And you know about number two. Number two tries harder. I got lost there on thinking which number two I meant. In fact, seven of the top 10 wind power companies in the world are Chinese. Last year, over half of the world's newly installed wind power, it was all built in China. And it turns out that Goldwind is also coincidentally based in the Xinjiang region. And it participates in the Uyghur forced labor programs. Isn't that great? Oh, it also turns out that Apple has a partnership with Goldwind on four wind farm joint ventures in China. It's part of Apple's goal of reaching 100% carbon neutrality. Oh, that's great. They should build a great wall and just put some of those slaves right in the wall. Oh, they've already done that. Yeah, but Apple wasn't involved in that one. If saving the planet requires just a little slavery here and there, it's totally worth it, right? Joe Biden and his climate czar John Kerry keep saying if the U.S. will abandon fossil fuels, all those workers can just shift over to solar and wind power jobs, you know. Good-paying union jobs. Yet just 2 weeks ago, a wind turbine plant in South Dakota closed, putting 300 workers out of a job. The company said it had to close because of changing market conditions, foreign competition, and proposed revisions to tax policies affecting the wind energy industry in the United States. So a lot of green energy cheerleaders will think that offshore wind farms are the ticket for America's coastal regions because the ocean winds there are so strong and so beautiful and consistent. So far, the U.S. has one offshore wind farm, and it's off the coast of Rhode Island. It cost about $300 million to build, and they anchored wind turbines in the ocean by anchoring all the way down to the ocean floor. And then they had to bury power cables beneath the ocean floor to supply electricity for the residents of one island. Let me hear it. Could be Manhattan, but it's not. The 1,000 residents of one single island. The six turbines, you know, that are connected and buried deep in the ocean floor, they've been operating since 2016, and those 1,000 residents pay 24 cents per kilowatt hour, which is only twice the amount that the average person pays for electricity everywhere else. But hey, the Block Island Wind Farm, it's doing well. Well, it's not doing well right now. I mean, it's offline right now for repairs. The high voltage cables that, you know, carry the electricity to the land, they screwed it up and didn't realize they need to bury them deeper than that. And so they're kind of coming out of the seabed and they're now being exposed. So they had to take that offline. But hey, that is going to work like a dream someday. The cables have to be reburied at a cost of $30 million. In the meantime, the wind farm gets fixed. Block Island residents will get their electricity from diesel generators on floating docks. Despite this glaring example of an insanely expensive green energy boondoggle that currently doesn't even work, eight more Atlantic Coast states are planning to build offshore wind farms so they can achieve their carbon-free dream by 2050. And just last month, the Biden administration struck a deal to open the California coast offshore wind farms. Isn't that great? You get a wind farm and you get a wind farm and you and you and you. Most importantly, this is part of the Biden administration's goal to, say it with me, kids, create thousands of good paying union jobs. President Biden has all sorts of green goodness planned for you. He's doubling down on screwing up cost effectiveness for people in their daily lives. He's doing it sometimes while he's sleeping. But come on, man, we're trying to save the planet. It's no joke. His infrastructure proposal, for example, plans to retrofit 2 million homes and buildings to make them more energy efficient. For a preview of how that's likely to go, we just have to look across the pond.
Hello, Great Britain, calling Great Britain, it's America.
The UK has passed laws to ensure it reaches net zero carbon emissions by 2050. One of their requirements is for people to remove gas boilers from their homes, right? Which they depend on for heating and hot water. And they're going to be replaced with new, much larger electric heat pump units. Now, the new heat pump unit costs about £10,000, which is only about $14,000. I mean, you could spend that. What, you wouldn't even notice it. 25 million British homes must be converted in this way. Plus, many homes will have to spend another $14,000 to upgrade insulation to meet the new government standards. And thanks to the UK's major investment in offshore wind farms, electricity prices for British citizens, they've only almost doubled. You see what's happening here? Oh, it's all good. It's all good. California solar panel law for new homes cracked open the door for the government to require green makeovers of your home and your car now. Meanwhile, ESG investors are poised to rake it in from companies that make those generators and that insulation and all that stuff you're going to be required by law to buy. You want to talk about rigging the system? This is how the rich get richer. Well, we're not done yet with the problems of going green. There's just a couple of things. Like, I hate to even mention it, such a minor detail, but the electric car. Next.
My name is Joe Biden, and I'm a car guy.
The future of the auto industry is electric. There's no turning back.
I'm Joe Biden, and I'm a car guy. And the future is electric. Bum, 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 bum. It's electric.
And there's no turning back. President Biden really wants you to know, you gotta get rid of your car. Diesel, gas, get rid of it as soon as possible. Because it's oh, look at that cute little kid over there. Man, I want to smell her hair. Anyway, we have to do this because of science, man. Biden's infrastructure proposal includes $175 billion in subsidies for electric vehicles. And just 2 weeks ago, he got together with the rest of his adventure friends in the G7 and announced that together, Wonder Twin Powers activate, they will phase out all gasoline and diesel cars and hand those keys right over to China. According to the Cato Institute, American vehicles are responsible for about 2.4% of all the carbon emissions. Wow. So if we banned all gas cars and trucks in America tomorrow, we wouldn't even make a dent in the overall climate picture. But we've got to do it now, now. Plus, electric vehicles still run on electricity. Now, I don't think the left knew this, or know this. You may shock some of your friends because that electricity, 79% of it is still generated by fossil fuels. Now, I mean, it's fine if you want to make electric vehicles that work just as well and can do everything my gas powered car can do. That's great. When that happens, I'm sure a lot of people are on their own free will going to choose that as an option, but we're not really there yet, are we? People still use typewriters for a very long time after personal computers hit the market. Government didn't mandate to throw out all the typewriters, but as the technology of PCs and word processing improved and became more affordable, eventually people stopped using typewriters. I don't know where I can even get a ribbon for my IBM Selectric. Do you? The computer option was better. It was more convenient. But you want to write on a typewriter, you still can. With cars, however, the left wants to force the issue. There's more and more urgency to simply ban gas vehicles as an option. Often it seems like Democrats are simply making policy for their NPR latte-sipping crowd. Sure, these electric vehicle mandates work for the crowd that can't afford to abandon their gas cars, but these policies don't usually work for the average American. Now, having said that, there are some sound things that are really appealing about, EVs. Consumer Reports finds that a typical EV owner can save the average of $800 to $1,000 a year on fueling costs compared to an equivalent gas-powered car. I'm sure that number is even higher now. Now, that would obviously help a lot of people out, wouldn't it? Yeah, EVs also have generally less expensive and less frequent maintenance because largely the EV motor has fewer moving parts. One recent study estimates that the per mile repair and maintenance cost for EVs is a little less than half of that of gas vehicles. That's really good. So you're saving a lot on maintenance. That would help a lot of Americans out as well. Now, here's just a couple of the drawbacks to EVs. First of all, they're very expensive. No matter how much you try to convince people that they're saving the planet, you know, you just get an EV and you'll save the planet. It's never going to go mainstream until the price comes way down on those crap boxes. Currently, EVs cost from 10 to over 40% more than the gas model of the car. Typically, EVs cost at least $10,000 more than their gas model counterpart. And if you want an EV that can go at least 200 miles on a single battery charge, well, that EV is going to cost you at least $37,000 because you're going 200 miles on one charge. Oh, my gosh. And someday we'll have steam engines. Earlier, I mentioned $175 billion that President Biden wants to spend on EV subsidies. Because EVs are so much more expensive than comparable gas models, it means EV tax incentives are really subsidies for wealthy people. How do I know that's true? Well, when the $7,500 tax credit for buying an EV started in 2016, 78% of the people who took advantage of that had an income of over $100,000. You know, I'm in a very small town of about 600 people. They have mainly old trucks because it's a working class town. I haven't seen any Teslas up here. Yet in very wealthy areas of Texas, man, I see them everywhere. What's wrong with these people? Another 7% who used the credit were millionaires. Even 2 years later, 62% of the people who used the tax credit had incomes over $200,000. This federal subsidy approach clearly is not helping middle-class families get into EVs. Besides middle-class and working-class Americans, they're typically buying used cars anyway. But we got to get rid of those used cars, don't we? By the way, there's always fine print with federal subsidies. Once 200,000 EVs from an individual manufacturer have been sold, the federal tax credit just phased out of that car maker. So if you were hoping to use that tax credit on Tesla, yeah, not going to happen because that tax credit will be gone at the end of 2019. Oops. That was a long time ago. And the current $7,500 tax credit is, well, it isn't exactly an automatic discount. You won't see a dime of that credit until you file your taxes the following year. Another major drawback of EVs compared to gas cars is range. On average, EVs have a range of 193 miles on a single charge. Why? Eleanor? Who needs to go more than 193 miles? It may work for a city, but that's only if you can plug it in at home every night and you don't go 193 miles in one sitting. But around 40% of Americans don't live in single-family homes where they can use the personal charger. Lack of charging stations and long charging times make EVs much less practical than a gas vehicle. While you plug your EV into a regular 120 socket at home, it's going to charge at a rate of about 4 miles of range per hour. Wow. The places we will go. At that rate, it could take you 2 days to fully charge the battery so you can go another 193 miles. Now, Tesla has the supercharger stations for its car, but it still takes about 30 minutes just to get 80% charged. Longer if the weather is kind of cold. And at least for now, Tesla superchargers only work on Tesla vehicles. This show's audience know that I do a road trip from Dallas to the ranch in Idaho every single year. Dallas to Boise is a 1,600-mile trip one way in a gas car. Now, that's not counting any stops or, you know, going to the fast food restaurants or the truck stops. And anyway, that's about 24 hours of drive time. Now, let's say I spend $37,000 on an EV that has a 200-mile battery range. That means my road trip to Idaho, I get to stop about every 3 hours to charge. That's right. Let's say I can find a super charging station each time. That's still going to take an hour to recharge. Many fast charging station companies like EVgo have 1 hour time limits on using a station. But let's say 1 hour gives me another 200 miles every time. On my 1,600-mile trip, I would have to make 8 minimum 1 hour stops to recharge the battery. That's in a utopian world. And according to Electrify America, the map, which shows where charging stations are located across the U.S., I'd have to alter my route to make sure I could hit enough charging stations along the way. That would add several more hours of driving and recharging. Oh, my 24-hour road trip is now turned into 36 hours or more. Yeah, 36 hours in the car with teenagers? Oh, I'll eat kale sandwiches for a month rather than doing that. So price, range, charging inconvenience means Americans are not really ready to buy what Biden is selling anytime soon. But even if we could all run out and get electric vehicles right now, are they that much better? Oh, gosh, you know the problem with questions like that? Is I have a great staff of researchers who found the answer I give it to you. Next, man. So since EV, electric vehicles, run on a giant battery, which basically forms the base, you know, running the length of the vehicle, it requires a lot of metals, especially lithium. More on that in a minute, but it's key to part of the answer on the question about whether EVs are actually better for the environment. I want to give you a quote. A 2014 study published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences looked at the entire life cycle of EVs' emissions, from mining the metals required for the batteries to producing the electricity needed to power them. And then compare this with the average emissions of a gas-powered vehicle. The team found when electric vehicles are charged with coal-powered electricity, they're actually worse for the environment than conventional gasoline cars. Oh, my gosh, that's kind of a big deal. Interesting, we haven't heard that from the White House. No, uh-uh. Here's some more science Team Biden forgot to mention. The Union of Concerned Scientists have calculated that manufacturing a mid-size EV with an 84-mile range results in about 15% more emissions than manufacturing an equivalent gasoline vehicle. For larger, longer-range EVs that travel more than 250 miles per charge, the manufacturing emissions can be as much as 68% higher. So if saving the planet is truly the main concern here, based on just this evidence that I've given you in the last 40 so minutes, no one should be making electric cars. Making electric vehicles requires a lot of minerals like lithium, cobalt, zinc, copper, nickel, and all other rare earth minerals. The International Energy Agency now says the rush to save the planet through EV production means a quadrupling of mineral requirements for clean energy technologies by 2040. And based on the previous parts of this episode, you can predict which country is the world leader in processing elements needed for these batteries. Right, China. The average EV requires over 200 kilograms of minerals. The average gas vehicle requires 40 kilograms of minerals, mostly copper. A single EV has 22 pounds of lithium in it. China is the third largest lithium-producing country in the world behind Australia and Chile. But it owns additional stakes in Australia and South America, so it can continue processing 60% of the world's supply. Yet another way that the green reset of American energy is putting us all at the mercy of communist China. Oh, and remember, during the Obama administration, when the world was going to end over fracking, well, the Institute for Energy Research now says, and I quote, mining and processing of lithium turns out to be far more environmentally harmful than what turned out to be the unfounded issues with fracking. Huh, unfounded now. The same report quotes lithium battery expert from the University of Chile. He's talking about the environmental damage from lithium mining in his country. But his comments sums up all the major far-left climate policies I've talked about tonight. He says, quote, this isn't a green solution. It's not a solution at all. Well, just another thought on lithium. What are we going to do if we use all that lithium for batteries? What will Britney Spears do? Seriously. I'm going on vacation for a couple of days because doing this job makes my head hurt a lot. So I'm going to go on vacation and celebrate Independence Day with my family. I hope you take some time to really discuss the meaning of Independence Day, what it really means to be free, in a great letter to George Washington. One of the generals wrote him and said, General, we've won the fort and the garrison. Your men behaved like men determined to be free. Ponder that this Independence weekend. What does that mean to live a life determined to be free? Good night.